foes, they're in business together. Daddy Bush knows the Carlyle Group, since years before, been raking in billions and itching for more.
It's blood for oil, we know there's a link.
They say code war,
we say code pink.
It's blood for oil, we know there's a link. They say code war,
we say code pink.
Code pink, the
freedom. That was Code Pink by Emma's Revolution. Hello, I'm Terry Matson of Code Pink's Latin America team. Welcome to Code Pink Radio, presented by WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, and many other community radio stations like Western Mass Community Broadcasting, WMCBLP, 107.9 FM. We are also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Check out our website at www.codepink.org/radio, where you will find all of our episodes from our very first to our most recent. Today, we will spend the hour in conversation with Carlos Ron, Venezuelan Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs for North America. 2024 will witness presidential elections in Venezuela. Per the Venezuelan Constitution, presidential elections are held every 6 years, the last being May 2018, of which I observed. In today's episode, Carlos and I will discuss a variety of U.S.-Venezuelan foreign policy issues, including U.S. and European Union election interference by attempting to choose the opposition candidate that will run against sitting president Nicolas Maduro, the Barbados Agreement, the continued use of unilateral economic sanctions to influence Venezuelan domestic policy, including electoral results, and how all of this affects geopolitics in our hemisphere. Stay tuned. We think you will find today's episode timely, compelling, and informative. But first, a few top stories from the region. The trial of former Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez, which was to begin February 12 in New York, has been postponed until February 20, one of his lawyers said on Saturday, February 10. Hernandez was extradited to the United States on drug charges in 2022, accused of facilitating the smuggling of 500 tons of cocaine in exchange for millions of dollars in bribes. His trial has been delayed because U.S. prosecutors, quote, confirmed they were unable to complete the redaction of classified information, unquote, that they were supposed to have already handed over to the defense. Hernandez, 55, has maintained that he is innocent. Next, from Haiti. A former U.S. government informant was sentenced on February 9 to life in prison after pleading guilty to conspiring to kill Haiti's president and admitting that he attended strategic meetings before the assassination in 2021. Joseph Vincent, 58, a Haitian American, became the fourth of 11 defendants to be sentenced to life in the Miami federal case for his supporting role in the murder plot spanning South Florida, Haiti, and Colombia. Vincent is cooperating with federal prosecutors by providing evidence of the meetings, logistics, and actions of some of the other co-defendants who still face trial. At his plea hearing in December 2023, Vincent admitted in a statement filed with his plea agreement that he met with a group of co-conspirators in Haiti on the eve of the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse on July 7, 2021. The factual statement was signed by Vincent, his attorney, and prosecutors. The statement said he wore a U.S. State Department pin to make himself look official to his Haitian counterparts. He also participated in a plan to stir up protests against Haiti's leader and use them as a cover to remove Moïse by force using weapons. And from Venezuela, oil majors, including Chevron Corporation and Repsol SA, are alleviating Venezuela fuel shortages as part of new deals following the lifting of U.S. sanctions that have been allowed to expand operations in the South American nation. Italy's INE SPA and France's Estembalisme Morial et Prom SA, I hope I said that correct, are among the companies delivering a string of fuel and refined products to state-owned PDVSA in the past 4 months, according to three people familiar with the matter and data from intelligence firm Kepler Ltd. Some of the deliveries are part of recently signed deals that offer more operational control to the foreign partners, including procurement of financial decisions. Venezuela imported 84,000 barrels of oil a day of refined oil, including gasoline, diesel, and naphtha in January. That's the highest since October 2020, when Iran started to supply fuel to the country to address shortages. The increased imports have helped ease years of painful fuel shortages that kept drivers in line for sometimes days to fill up their cars and severely restricted Venezuela's industrial and agricultural activity. They follow the easing of U.S. sanctions in October as the Biden administration pushed for President Nicolas Maduro to compromise on free and fair elections. The U.S. awarded a 6-month license for oil operations in Venezuela, but it's not clear whether the companies will keep supplying fuel if oil and gas sanctions are renewed in April, as the Biden administration has warned. With that, let's now welcome Carlos Rohn to discuss, among many topics, U.S. electoral interference in this year's Venezuelan presidential elections.
So basically, I think, one of the things that should be interesting about this moment is that, to me, the United States, once again, seems to be trapped into, pushing a regime change policy, not promoting Venezuelan democracy. I mean, we should be clear on that. There's nothing in the events of the last several months that you can really say show the willingness of the United States to back and strengthen or support in any way Venezuelan democracy, because rather I think it is trying to interfere once again into whatever democratic processes we have by pushing for certain candidates, certain policies, certain things. And that always, of course, hurts the democratic process. I say this because, to start, to me, what has always been perplexing in the last couple of months, why is the United States so insistent on backing a candidate or somebody to be a candidate when you already know that this person has a problem in the first place and has it's not eligible to be a candidate? This to me is not naive, and I think here the problem is that you see the U.S. trapping itself again in like Guaido-like situation.
Yeah,
you're pushing for something that that it's not legal. I mean, in the case of Guaido, they pushed for creating a parallel presidency that wasn't going to sustain itself. There's no popular support. There's no legal support. That was, backing themselves into a corner that was at that end. There was no learning from that experience. It seemed that at the beginning that, when once you departed and you said, well, now, Guaido is not, the opposition's 2015 assembly decided that Guaido was no longer its president. Well, maybe you started to think that there was going to be some other, route that would sort of respect Venezuelan processes and respect Venezuelan democracy. But then you choose to back a candidate that clearly was not going to be able to be a candidate because she can't run. And she knows she can't run since 2015. We're not saying this not something. This is not something new. This is not some. This is not like she became a candidate and then was you know somebody decided, oh, you can't run. No, she knows she can run since 2015, and we're in what 2020. Well, now 2024.
24.
You know, now it's 2023. Whatever. But you know, so there's already a problem there, because what are you trying to do? I mean, what conditions are you trying to push for? What are those then, you know, democratic conditions you're trying to push for? Because then you're always going to try, it seems to me that always the United States is trying to force the Venezuelan government into, you know, a path to force the Venezuelan legislation, Venezuelan electorate, you know, into the path they want to take. Now, why choose Maria Corina Machado as a candidate? Well, she comes from the Venezuelan elite, historical Venezuelan mm-hmm. elite. You know, Venezuela, like many other Latin American countries, has a history of, you know, family oligarchies. You know, the president talks about the, you know, the big last names. And, you know, it's because, you know, there were people here that, you know, just because of their last name, they thought they were, you know, they owned or you know, they have certain rights above everybody else in the population. You know, a friend always used to joke when saying, describing the difference between somebody like Maria Corina Machado and the rest of us. You know, we say we're Venezuelan because, you know, we were born here. We, you know, we eat arepas, you know, we feel that this is our country. When she says it's her country, it's because she actually believes it's hers. She actually believes it's a piece of property that she inherited from her family. And we're like, you know... Yeah. Squatters living in her property. The rest of the country, you know, is just squatting her property. So this is very important to understand. And by the way, she is not, you know, there, I guess it was a notion, in some of the, you know, Washington analysts that somehow she was popular. And perhaps that's why, I'm guessing here, perhaps that's why they insist on such a, you know, such a figure. Because the failure of backing Guaido was so large. The realization that Guaido had no popular support was so large that they believed that because she had some popularity in some segment of the Venezuelan opposition that didn't like Guaido and that didn't like other leaders of the opposition, then, or maybe this is the Guaido that is going to be more popular. Maybe this is the Guaido that, you know, we can push for and pressure. But when you go, you know, there was she did a demonstration just on January 23rd, which is the day it's, you know, it's remembered here as the day where we overthrew the last dictatorship. There was not 200 people there. It's interesting when you see what is she calling for right now? She's calling for demonstrations, not in Venezuela. She's going for demonstrations outside of Venezuela. With, you know, in where other with migrants live, or you know, where other people live, but not with people here in Venezuela. That says a lot, because that tells you that there's no that she doesn't really have a base that would run out on the streets and protest and do something. You know, it's not a in terms of popular support, it's not there in the same way it wasn't there with Guaido. And just to finish this thought, why then would she be, you know, would Washington be so inclined to support her and in a way where, you know, in a manner that risks all the other conversations that have been, you know, going on, risk, you know, the peaceful progress of conversations between government and opposition? Well, you know, at the end of the day, you know, she represents, she still is a representative of their interests. Mm-hmm. She was always close to the United States. She's been funded by the United States. She's called for U.S. sanctions. She's called for an invasion, mm-hmm. you know, with these mm-hmm. are serious, you know, these are very... Yeah. You know, for far less, people are going to jail in the United States, you know, over the January 6th events. Yeah. For far less than, you know, what Maria Corina Machado was proposing here. So it's interesting to see, you know, this again, this misjudgment on the part of the U.S. administration in trying to force the Venezuelan democratic process into at that end.
You mentioned that she's, you know, traveling and stirring up or encouraging support with Venezolanos in the diaspora. She's looking, you know, I will say, Carlos, the same thing is happening in happening in Mexico right now. Very, very similar, with the U.S. backing an opposition candidate who actually does have cartel ties, but they're trying to make the president look like the, I mean, it's really very, very similar scenario in a presidential election year.
Sure. And the issue here is that, you know, it's how you build this narrative. Because basically she doesn't have that popular support inside. So she goes out and builds, you know, she's appealing to people outside of Venezuela to demonstrate, because it's easy to do that. Because it's easy to come and say, oh, these people, so look at the support I have from Venezuelan people. So these are Venezuelan people that are, you know, probably not even connected to the country for, you know, several years already. Or that have no, you know, that have no real say or interest in the country. I mean, I'm not disqualifying their nationality. I'm just saying that, you know, that she has to appeal to, you know,
outside versus inside,
because she does not have a backing inside to do it.
She's considered a criminal inside.
Of course. Well,
it's been judged.
Of course.
Yeah. She's been judged a criminal inside the country. I mean, it's fascinating. And, you know, you say the United States hasn't learned anything. I don't know if it's that Washington hasn't learned anything, or is that they're just so arrogant. Well, I guess it does equate to not learning anything. They're so arrogant, and so they have their vision, and they are incapable of diverting from that. I mean, this is the path. We stay on it. We do it. And there's no capability of thinking outside that box.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, I mean, I see it, you know, as a U.S. citizen, that my entire lifetime, the United States has been at war somewhere, whether it's a declared war or not. There's been something going on, and usually more places than one, my entire life. And there just is no other, it's like, this is how it's done. The people that run the country are raised from certain families, certain business interests. They go to the same schools, they, you know, from the age of five all the way through graduate school. That's their world. That's what they know. That's all they know. And what they have been raised and groomed and trained to do. And it's to just try and break that up, or to get people to think different. I don't know how you do it, because it's really got to change inside the states. I mean, Venezuela is really, you are doing every for the last 20 plus years. And actually, today's a really important day for you. Yes. All. Yeah.
25 years.
January too, but today's maybe even a bigger day.
Yeah.
So you're making all those changes. We're not doing that in the States. And Carlos, you and I have talked about that before, that the change has to occur, you know, in the North. But I wonder, with what we're seeing with this intervention, with the upcoming election, has there been an election date called yet?
But starting next week, there was the call for the sessions in the National Assembly that would begin to determine, you know, what the calendar is going to be, what, you know, how everything's going to run. So maybe very soon we'll have electoral calendar, so we know, you know, what's going to happen, and, you know, when and so forth, you know, what the dates. to be. Wait, constitutionally, it has to be this year. Well, we don't. Well, we have to look at the exact date.
Okay. Well, and it was smart to wait for the court decision.
By the way,
yeah,
also
that was crucial.
No, but also by the way, another interesting thing about, you know, what amounts to democracy and what doesn't. See, we're always being lectured by the United States about how, what democracy should be and so forth. And, you know, in this case, you have this particular person saying, you know, you can't have elections without me, you know, now trying to avoid having elections when, you know, maybe about, you know, 3 weeks ago, people wanted, you know, or the United States even say, oh, you have to have elections, you have to define the elections. So now that we actually want to, you know, now that we actually going to have, you know, an electoral calendar, or now they don't want the elections. See, democracy can't be, democracy can always be how you want it to be. I mean, it's not democracy only when it suits you or purposes and your interests. It's democracy, it's something that gets contested. And now, you know, being contested means, you know, you have to, you know, play by rules. There are certain rules, and there are certain rules everywhere in every democracy. This is not exclusive of Venezuela. When the Barbados agreements, were signed, it was very clear that, you know, both sides rejected all forms of violence. Both sides, you know, were not going to green light, you know, any attempts to, you know, to have any hate speech or anything that would disturb, you know, the peace, or that would, you know, incite sanctions, or that would incite invasions. This was all very clear. And also, you know, with regards to how the electoral process was going to take place, you know, there was an article in the document saying, look, as long, you know, anybody can participate as long as they fulfill the requirements by law. And the requirements by law were clear. There was also a accompanying document, a partial agreement, where it's, you know, it laid out how, you know, what the process was going to be to validate candidacies. So whoever wanted to take it up to the court and say, you know, I want to run, and then the court would analyze each case, and, you know, you had an opportunity to present your evidence. And so, in any case, you know, the document was very clear about saying that once you would take to the court your evidence, your elements, present them to the court, and the court had them evaluated, you were to respect the decision made by the court. If the court found, for whatever reasons, that the law had been violated, then, you know, you couldn't run. Now, this is important because, you know, the Barbados agreements, you know, the Barbados Accords don't mean that everything, you know, this is, you know, you're erasing everything that happened in the past, and then anybody can run, or anybody can do whatever they want, because, you know, you forget the past. There was no mention about forgetting the past. There was no mention about overlooking or forgetting, you know, past crimes and so forth. You had to present yourself, and then you had to be evaluated, and then and then the agreement was, you know, whatever the decision made, it was going to be acceptable for all sides. This was signed not only by the government, this was signed by the opposition, and this was signed also by the mediators, you know, represented by Norway, the government of Norway. So to say that this was, you know, something illegal, there was some, you know, the way the State Department statements are saying things like, you know, they're not being fully implemented, or they're not being, or the Maduro government is not playing by rules. That's not true. It was laid out very clearly that there was a process, there were steps, and after those steps were taken, the whatever decisions were, you know, taken there, they had to be accepted. So we're not violating the agreement. You know what's violating the agreement? Reinstating sanctions, you know, like they did on the gold. You know what's violating the agreement? You know, supporting conspiracies again to try to we discovered five conspiracies in from last this year. Attempted murder, against the president, espionage, cases of espionage, trying to get information to foreign intelligence agencies. So, and
that story just broke like yesterday.
we're by the way, some members of Maria Corina's party and organization are actually being investigated because of these things. So you see, again, this attempt at promoting this specific candidacy, it's not, see, when you promote one, when you force something, you're not allowing democracy. You're not hoping for democracy to take place. You're trying to impose something.
Yeah. You're dictating.
This is direct intervention.
Yeah.
Okay. So and that's what I think, is very serious and very problematic.
Thank you so much, Carlos. Let's take a quick break before continuing our conversation.
Over all Palestinian, one humanity we all bleed. They've got nowhere to go. That's because Palestine is their home. They will not run or hide, run or hide, run or hide. They will not run or hide, run or hide, run or hide. We will not run or hide. All of us are Palestine. We will not run or hide. We are all, we are Palestine. We will not run or hide. Stand tall, stand with Palestine. We will not run or hide. Worldwide, stand with Palestine. We will not run or hide. All of us, stand with Palestine. We will not run or hide, run or hide, run or hide.
You are listening to Code Pink Radio, coming to you through Pacifica Radio's WPFW in Washington, D.C., WBAI in New York City, and KFPT in Houston. Welcome back. I'm Terry Matson of Code Pink's Latin America team. In recognition of all people's right to a sovereign homeland, including Venezuelans, we chose today's midpoint song, We Are All Palestinian, performed by Mistahi Korkil. You are listening to Code Pink Radio, presented by WBAI in New York City, WPFW in Washington, D.C., and KPFT in Houston. Now, let's return to our program with Carlos Ron, Venezuelan Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs for North America. So, with the court decision saying that Machado cannot run, and so this is, and the U.S. was, that's the candidate the United States does want. It's fascinating to me that the United States is trying to, through legal and criminal persecution, get rid of a candidate in the United States, but they don't see it that way. As a result of the court determining she, because of her past criminal behavior and inciting overthrow of the government, etc., she cannot run as a candidate. The United States response was the sanctions, the immediate sanctions on the gold. And then in April, the sanctions on the oil or the non-renewal of the waivers on the oil, is that? Well, but then the Venezuelan government has said you're going to stop accepting the repatriation flights.
Okay, so the process was in the past couple of days that they decided to snap back sanctions on the oil, on the gold mining sector. Mm-hmm. And then they said that the other licenses that were issued related to the gas and oil industry, mm-hmm. that they would snap back by April 18th, unless, you know, there was some significant mm-hmm. change and, you know, and meaning, really meaning translation, you know, unless, you know, Maria Corina Machado becomes right. candidate. Okay. So, I mean, this is ludicrous, you know, this is ludicrous that you have everything is wrong since the beginning. It's wrong that you have illegal sanctions. Okay. But then, you know, if you're in some sort of conversation or negotiation, you know, and then you threaten the, you know, this is not a negotiation. This is basically, you know, cowboy style, you know, we're going to threaten you. If you don't do it, then if you don't do what we say, we're going to act and we're going to hurt you. And that's basically what they're saying. So, again, you know, when the Venezuelan government in these conversations opened a path for the repatriation of some of our citizens, I mean, this is a very complicated issue to do because there are no consular relations between the two countries.
Right.
So this in itself, it was a step of good faith on the part of Venezuela. And it's been a very complex operation because we don't have the tools that are normally put in place to do this. But again, in the spirit of trying to, you know, find common grounds and trying to start a dialogue, you know, we started to open this possibility. But in order to handle a serious operation as that, you have to have trust with your counterpart.
Yeah.
Now, mm-hmm. if we are being threatened, if we are being put against a corner, I mean, the whole process of, you know, establishing trust and having a partner that you can work with, you know, becomes much more difficult. So, you know, we have to take a position, you know, of protection of the Venezuelan interest. And it's horrible that, you know, again, this is something we've been criticizing for a while, the way that now, you know, the U.S. seems to be, politicians in the U.S. seem to be trying to use Venezuelan migrant citizens, mm-hmm. you know, for political purposes.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
This isn't your first issue. I mean, look at how everything is that's going on inside of the U.S. You know, governors throwing people around, sending each other, you know, migrants as if they were, you know, I don't know, boxes, and, you know, not people. This is terrible. You know, the use of people in a political purpose like this is mm-hmm. it's very hurtful and very problematic. So I think that, you know, the United States has to have a shift in that policy in the sense that, you know, you can't be, you know, playing with people in this manner. You can't be threatening a whole population and a whole country into starvation or into economic problems, the size of the problems we faced in the last several years. You know, Venezuela, you know this very well. Venezuela has lost almost 99% of its income, you know, since the maximum pressure campaign from Trump began. Now, we you know, people thought that maybe with a new administration, you know, things will be different. But it's been so hard to have those sanctions lifted. Up to now, there's, you know, the sanctions are still there. You know,
Oh,
you
yeah.
have
No, it's just a continuation.
it's a continuation of a policy that you know that and again you're departing from the errors of supporting Guaido to the error of trying to force another candidate into government, into office, without even caring about, you know, the decisions or the consideration of the Venezuelan population. Again, it's not an issue of supporting democracy, it's an issue of forcing interest into Venezuelan politics. So I think, you know, we should reflect on this matter. And well, hopefully, you know, there's something, hopefully this is not the end of dialogue on the part of the United States, because, you know, once they turn again into the, you know, the mode of sanctions and threats, then, you know, it makes dialogue almost impossible. You know, we've been trying to sit down and dialogue, but we need to build trust. We need to, you know, have guarantees, and, you know, we need to be respected.
So can we talk about, again, I just wanted to say with, you know, we mentioned quickly the, you know, the Monroeism versus Bolivarism, or the philosophy of dominating the Americas versus promoting integration of the Americas, which is the Simon Bolivar approach. And just so the audience can, because that's something the audience should really understand. And you and I had a great conversation about that last year as part of our Monroe Doctrine episode. It was really, I learned a lot in that conversation. Just one last thing with the geopolitics and looking at what's happening, and another reason possibly why the United States wants to dictate who the next president of Venezuela is. Venezuela has a Caribbean coast, and you're looking at, and you have now this current situation in Ecuador, where the U.S. military has full access to the country, can come and go as it likes. That's a Caribbean, no, actually Ecuador's on the Pacific. Pacific, yeah, I'm thinking of the Isthmus of Panama. So it's on the Pacific, Colombia's both. But you're looking, I look at the map of the northern part of South, the Caribbean part, Pacific and Pacific part of South America. You have Ecuador, you have the Isthmus of Panama, Colombia, Venezuela. This is almost like we're watching the U.S. Navy build. And of course, the Southern Command's been off the coast of Venezuela for, I don't know, since 2015 now, yeah? Since the National Assembly elections in December of 15. But are we watching a U.S. naval buildup more than what already exists? And is that to control both sides of the Panama Canal? Is it trade? Is it to block other foreign interests in the region? What are we watching here? And I also want to say something about the Ecuador. The Ecuadorian president said he's not going to recognize the Venezuelan elections. Did he not say that a few days ago? That he's not? Yeah. Anyway, that's a whole nother thing. But he's another U.S., you know.
Well, I think, you know, there's a little bit of everything that you mentioned, in the sense that see what I think is going on also is that, you know, if you lose, you know, your capacity to have supremacy in technology is being lost. Your capacity to have supremacy in finance is being lost. The only real thing that the United States has supremacy is the military industry. Mm-hmm. When Jake Sullivan spoke last year about, you know, building a new Washington consensus and basing it on strengthening these technologies, and, you know, most of these technologies are tied to the military industry. When you were talking about covering the, you know, the economy by doing these specific investments, you know, part of it is, you know, reboosting the military industry. So that means you need to have more of a military display. And like you said, I mean, there's always been threats in the Caribbean Sea against Venezuela, but there's also a very serious threat right next door in Guyana. And this is part of the, you know, this has been part of the recent issues. You know, I think we talked about this before, but you know, Venezuela there's always been an attempt at boxing Venezuela in. There's always been an attempt at creating trouble in Venezuela's borders in order to have, you know, weaken or destabilize the country. I mean, during the time of Uribe, there were attempts of paramilitary to come into Venezuela. There were, you know, other
from Colombia.
There were other attempts of you know, generating chaos. But now, I mean, more recently during the Guaido times, you know, in February of 2019, there was an attempt to violently enter Venezuela with so-called, you know, humanitarian aid and so forth. So it means there's an attempted invasion. Similar things were attempted by Brazil. The difference was that, you know, the border between Venezuela and Brazil is much less populated, and there were all the other dynamics that played into there, and it wasn't achievable. That's why, you know, we see that, you know, there's so much support being issued by the United States to ExxonMobil and, you know, and the presence of the Southern Command in Guyana now, trying to lay claim to land that is still not properly delimited between both countries, and
there just happens to be a lot of oil sitting under that land.
Sure, yes. But also, again, you know, it's the oil, but also is the threat of, you know, the tension, the military presence that has an aim to destabilize Venezuela.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I think that, you know, when you look at then like that map, like you said, you know, when you look at the whole region, what you see the military buildup that you see also elsewhere. I mean, you see the investment in NATO. Well, I'm not even going to talk about, you know, the support that's being given to the genocide in Palestine and you know, So there's large investments in the military industry, and I, of course, that's something that I think we should be concerned about all over the world, because I mean we're at a moment in time where we should be concerned about dealing with other problems as a community, as a global community, as a community of countries that help and support each other. We got to deal with a serious situation about our planet. We have an environmental, you know, a terrible environmental crisis that we don't know where it's going to take us. We don't know how it's going to, you know, we might lose the only planet we have and life as we know it. And rather than be concerned about how to solve those issues, we're building up. We have to be concerned about, you know, defending ourselves and building up, defenses against war. And there's wars all over the place. So this is a very troublesome, especially for, you know, peace-loving people that want to, you know, Venezuela, for example, is a country that wants to develop further, that wants to improve the, you know, the life of its people, of its citizens. We have a huge debt to, you know, most of our, you know, to the majority of our of Venezuelans. This is historic. It's a 200-year struggle to actually emancipate and actually have lives with, you know, independence and dignity. You know, this is what we're striving for. You know, we've been trying to do this for the last 25 years, to be a process of justice and to solve the, you know, the problems that that people have, but there's still many problems out there. Now, we don't want to be concerned about invasion. We don't want to be concerned about being blocked by the United States, about not even being able to, you know, to trade. We want to be concerned about, you know, developing improving the lives of the Venezuelan people. To live on the constant threat, on the constant aggression, well, it's, it, you know, just, takes you away from
trying to. It's a distraction from the other priority. Yeah, from the other priorities.
I could tell you, maybe in closing, you know, what we should. I could tell you something about what we're doing here.
Okay, great.
Since the beginning since January, when the president gave his address to the National Assembly, a yearly, it's like a State of the Union, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So he gives his yearly address, and then he talked about, the moment we're at and how we're, now going to be working on 7 important transformations in the social, the political, the economic sphere. And then the seventh transformation, which I think is very interesting, and I just want to share this point with you, is that we're talking about a geopolitical transformation. I mean, this is an element also that we are going to undergo, because we know that the world is rearranging. The world there's a new world order that's being created, and we wonder how to insert Venezuela into this process. Now, what may be interesting to people out there that wonder about, Venezuela's democracy and how it actually plays out. Every time we go for an election, the candidates have to present their programs, mm-hmm. and build their programs. So this year, with the idea of the 7 transformations, that the President Maduro is calling on the Venezuelan people to come out and help draft the next program. So we're holding assemblies. I'm actually going to participate in one tomorrow, where we're going to talk in this particular one. We're going to talk to Venezuelan social movements that have relations relations with other countries, or they have some sort of mm-hmm. international ties, because we're dealing with the geopolitical. But the idea is to have assemblies throughout the country, where you lay out some basic discussion topics. How do we see Venezuela inserting itself in this new geopolitical arrangement? What are the things that we mm-hmm. must consider? And issues like the environment, issues like how to make sure that social movements can participate in these new structures, everything from BRICS to CELAC to even the UN. Mm-hmm. I mean, all these contributions are going to be listened to. I mean, this is a process, it's an ongoing process that we have for the next several weeks, where we sit down in assemblies, we listen to each other, we take down, it's a huge effort of, systematizing all these considerations and replies, and hopefully we get some input in order to build this plan, which would be the program for the next administration under President Maduro. This, I think, is one of the exercises. See, sometimes when we talk about democracy, we almost resume the conversation to elections. And, as if democracy is only about elections.
Right. But what you're talking about is direct democracy. Exactly. You're going right to the people democracy to get ideas.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Democracy is listening. That's direct. Exactly. Democracy is sitting down, having a conversation, mm-hmm. having views, debating, trying to, mold something out about your view, my view. We have differences, we have divergences, and we have similarities. And how do we cooperate? And how do we build something together? So I think one of the most beautiful things in these 25 years is that, we've learned to live democracy beyond election. Mm-hmm. Democracy is not just a process mm-hmm. you go and deposit a vote and forget about it for the next 4, 5, 6 years. Democracy is something that you live every day, and then you have the dignity. Your dignity as a human being is recognized because you're invited to sit down and give your opinion, and yeah. that opinion adds to some to a community project, adds to a collective effort. That to me That to me is the essence of our democracy. And that's what we're involved in. For the next couple of weeks, you know, for the next 3 or 4 weeks, you have to see it. We've already started. There's huge assemblies all over the country, not only in Caracas, but also in different mm-hmm. places throughout the country where we're sitting down. Ministers are sitting down, you know, listening to people. Members of government, people in the National Assembly. It's a process, a collective effort to build the country we want for the next, you know, 6 years, for the next term of 6 years. This, I think, is very rich. And this, I think, you know, is something that, you know, I say this with a lot of pride, because I think...
Yeah, oh, for you. Most definitely.
I think we shouldn't be, we shouldn't, you know, of course we have to be humble, but we have to talk about this. Because people often, I see sometimes that we're looked at as if, you know, oh, poor Venezuela is being sanctioned and oppressed. And, you know, well, that's there. And it is true. And it is unfair to the people of Venezuela. But we're also, you know, we haven't just, you know, sat down and you know, taken the beat. You know, we're here crafting our future. We're here finding ways to make this democracy more effective and more, accountable to the people. And I think that's something that makes this all worth a while.
So. But it's direct participatory democracy. It is democracy. And when the citizens have a buy-in to the government and the programs being created, people have their differences and you don't always get 100% of what you want, but you've been part of the process and, you know, and then you support it. It's more easily, you know, to just, yeah, I help create this. So yes, I'm going to stand with it.
And that's why I think people should realize, you know, see, when they realize, you know, in a few months after elections, which, you know, most likely, I believe, because, you know, I'm part of this process, you know, I find it hard to believe that, you know, a process as democratic and as direct as this, it's not going to be, you know, continued. See, people want to continue this. Of course, we have criticisms of, and we have a lot, and we, you know, we talk and we tell each other things, and, you know, we have our criticisms and our scuffles here and there, but, you know, the fact that we can do this, that we can talk, that we can be mm-hmm. part of, that we can discuss, that we can have differences, that's what makes our democracy rich. And, you know, when people think about Venezuelan democracy, they build this narrative as if, you know, this is some, you know, dark place where there's, you know, no, well, this is a very lively place where there's a lot of transformation and democracy going on every day. And that's, you know, and that's why I believe, you know, 25 years is only the beginning of this revolution. It's going to continue because people realize that things they don't agree with, they can talk about, they can propose, they can eventually convince and change. And the process of convincing and achieving change is one of the, you know, most beautiful processes that a real democracy has given us.
That's wonderful. And here you are, you say, you know, we're not the sanctions and all this external pressure on Venezuela, that the country's still standing.
True.
You as a nation of people are still standing. And the rest of Latin America is not ignorant of that by any means. It's an example. And people, you know, people will say wherever I've gone throughout Latin America and the Caribbean, they look to Venezuela because you've had a complete political transformation that cannot ever be undone. The people have been brought into society, people who were never citizens, never counted before Chavez. They're participating, they vote, they have a say, as you've been saying, and you can't undo that. That can't be undone. And that is what other nations are still hoping to achieve. That just, that cannot be undone. The evolution of your citizens can't be undone. It's a fantastic thing that's happened. Thank you, Carlos, for a fascinating conversation, and thank you to our audience for listening to Code Peak Radio, presented by WBAI in New York City, WPFW in Washington, D.C., and KPFT in Houston. If you are interested in ending U.S. interference in Venezuela and throughout the hemisphere of the Americas, please support House Resolution 943, calling for the annulment of the Monroe Doctrine and the development of a new good neighbor policy. You can learn more about the resolution and how to support it by visiting codepeak.org.
Bush and Bin Laden, you think they're foes? They're in business together. Daddy Bush knows.